we have two wonderful guests. We have Rabbi Moshe Elephant, who's the Chief Rabbinic Coordinator, Kashrus Officer for the OU, which is the Kashrus organization that every other Kashrus organization in the world relies on. Any Hechsher you eat from anybody, be it the Badats, be it the Ungers, Starkey, Chavkey, they all ultimately come back to the OU. There's some ingredient that they're being relying on the OU's authority. And we have Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg, who is the head of Kashrus for the Starkey, two of the larger Kashrus organizations in the United States. I mean, OU is the giant that dwarfs everybody, but two of the more prominent. We had said we would have Rabbi Stone. Unfortunately, I'm traveling and having some internet problems, so we will do Rabbi Stone next week, together with Rabbi Zevlef. Rabbi Zevlef will be talking about tzedakah and shenanigans and maybe kupat ta'ir, etc. And we'll have Rabbi Stone talking about kashrus. You can listen to us on the usual variety, WMCA, WMCA.com, our podcast, or our phone line. Let's do away with that. I'd like to say a small vart on the parsha. Listen to this fed chazal. It says, Shechem b'ni chashka nafshei. My son Shechem is desirous, right, in love with your daughter. This is what Chamor tells Yaakov. So Amar Reb Shimon ben Lakish. So it's a Medrash Rabbah, Yalkut Shemayni, number of other Medrashim. B'shloisha l'shayna shal chiba, chiba b'hakadosh baruch hu es Yisrael. Three languages of love, of desire, does Hashem love Klal Yisrael. B'dveika, attached. Chasheka, passion. B'chafetza, desire. God loves us those three ways. How do you know that? V'atam advekim b'Hashem l'keichem, chashak Hashem b'chem, kisiyah l'chafetz. And where do we learn these all? Anu l'meidin miparshasei shel oisei rasha. We learn this from Shechem. Shechem was violently in love with Dina. He was passionate. He was desirous. He had every type of lust, love. We learn from that how God loves Klal Yisrael. And then the Gemara adds on, or the Medrash adds on, two more Lashonos. Rab Abba ben Elisha, two more. He says, Bahava ubedibur. So it's Dveikus, Chasheka, Chafetza, Ahava, and Bedibur. Now here's the funny question. We learn love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for us, God, for us, or us for God, from Shechem. An act of, you know, just of totally inappropriate behavior. That's where we learn love. Astonishing, no? And I think there's a really valuable lesson. You know, when somebody says, I love to learn, or I love to do a mitzvah, or I love to, I love to go to shul. Do you really love? I mean, do you love it as much as Shechem loved Dina? Do you love it as much as the Hava for an Isha Asura, for an illicit relationship? I mean, that's passion. So what's the Torah telling us? From the passion that we could have for that we're not supposed to, that should be to us a mushel, a metaphor, and a guiding rod for what our real love should be. We should have, like, real passion. But when you extend it, ultimately, you know, when we have real passion for something, and afterwards maybe we say, I can't believe I wanted to do that, or I thought that, and I feel dirty, or I feel, you know, abusive, or you know what we're supposed to say? Don't be disgusted by yourself. Use that as a metaphor for the love to do something that's appropriate. You love something deeply passionate about the inappropriate? Well, now, that's how strongly you should feel about your children, the people you are supposed to love. Convert it. Use it as a metaphor. Gemara says there were only a number of people, a small number of people, Dawud, Gimel, Shechnisul, Pardis, that entered sort of Gan Eden, whatever Pardis means, some transcendental place in the heavens while they were alive. Rabbi Akiva, and one of them was Ben Zayma. So the Gemara in Chagiga says, when Ben Zayma left the Pardis, they asked him a question. Mahu l'saris kalba? can you neuter a dog? You have to imagine that somebody who's leaving the paradise, couldn't they think of a more appropriate question to ask him? Can you neuter a dog? You know you're not allowed to neuter a behemoth mea, a kosher animal. You're not. I saw one of the Sfarim says, for Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac, he says like this. He says, you know, when you have a kid in the class who doesn't behave, what do you say? He's really wild. Neuter him. Let's cut him off by the legs. Or you say about yourself, you know, there's a really part about me that I really dislike. I have an anger issue. I have a lust issue. I have a, you know, whatever your issue may be, a greed issue, whatever it may be, neuter it. Just cut it off. Ben Zayma said, you know, if you really want to make it into the Olympics, the Ruchniyat, the spiritual Olympics, you want to be those that entered, you know, the Kalba, the Kelev always represents the part of you that's tummy, that's unclean. Ma'ol Asaris Kelba, do you neuter the part of yourself and that's unclean? Is that the way into the Olympics? And he said, no. On the contrary, you want to make it into the spiritual Olympics? You're going to need 100% every fiber of your energy. You want to be super successful at what you do? You know, it's a really competitive environment out there. You're going to need every part of yourself. So he says, you have to take the part of you that's the kelev, that chasheka, that chemda, and you got to turn it into positive energy. Ma'ol asaris kalba, he said, if you want to make it into the paradise, you can't be misaris the kelev. You have to turn it into something fabulous and positive, and that's the only. So from the love of Shechem is where we learn our love, Kaviyachal's love to us, our love to Kaviyachal, our love of doing a mitzvah. Do it with passion.
We have on the phone with us from New York City, Rabbi Moshe Elefant. He's the executive coordinator of the Kashrus Division and chief operating officer of the Kashrus Division of the OU. He also says a daf yomi shir with 1,000 listeners a day. I don't know if it's the largest daf yomi shir in the world, but it very possibly could be. And he also says other shiurim in his shul, etc. Welcome, Rabbi Elefant.
Thank you. As I said, the last time I was interviewed on your program, not by you, I told the interviewer, I think it was Rabbi Leibowitz, that I'm a very big fan of your program. I say shiur very early in the morning, so I don't always stay up through the program, but whenever I do, I very much enjoy it.
Thank you very much. Is it the largest daf yomi shiur in the world?
I don't know. It certainly, it has been called that.
Uh-huh. So Rabbi Elefant, we want to talk about what can we buy in a supermarket that doesn't need a hechsher? For both, it could be for many reasons. You're traveling and you're someplace where you're going to a supermarket and you don't have the hechsherim necessarily. Alternatively, it could be for cost savings. There's just like in drugs, there are the name brands and the generic brands for half price. If you buy sometimes, you're in a place that only has some of these very boutique, you know, very private label type of hechsherim, you may say, geez, the string beans here, it says water, potassium sorbate, and string beans, right? So what can you or can't you buy within the confines, obviously, of halacha? And obviously halacha is broad. There's chumra, there's nothing shalihai rubai chacham, etc. But just under the basic confines of halacha, what can you or can't you buy in a supermarket?
You know, so I might not be the right person to ask that question, or people may assume that I'm not the right person to ask that question, given that I'm involved at the OU, as you said a moment ago, and we give hashgachas. So I'm sure many of your listeners are thinking, well, of course he's going to say that everything needs a hashgacha. But that's really not
Basically, you're saying don't ask the barber if you need a haircut. Is that what you're
saying? Right. That's what I'm sure. I'm not saying that you're thinking that way, but I'm sure some of your listeners may. But really, that's not my perspective, and that's really not the perspective here at the OU. And I'll tell you why. Because we at the OU, we're a communal organization. No one owns the OU. It's a communal organization. And therefore, we don't have a vested interest in saying something needs to be kosher so we can have more accounts. Having given you that introduction, actually, as I'm in the world of kashrus more and more years, I'm here since 1987, we're realizing that more and more items need hashgacha, probably foods that we would have all assumed don't require hashgacha now do. And I'll give you a number of examples and the reasons why. So the first example that everybody knows, and I recall when I first joined the OU and I started traveling sometimes and I didn't want to schlep food, but everybody always knew that you could always find fruits and vegetables wherever you are, certainly wherever you are in the United States, and you could have a vegetable salad or you could have a fruit and you'll have something to eat. So there are, of course, two issues. One issue is we've discovered, and we spoke about that the last time I was on your program, that more and more vegetables have the concern of infestation that previously we didn't worry about them. You know, I don't know how old you are, but when I was young, we always ate strawberries. Strawberries is a real issue nowadays. And the same goes for broccoli, and which you could barely find with a good hashgacha. Asparagus, you essentially cannot. It's become very, very complicated. The other issue when you speak about fruits and vegetables, which interestingly has become more of an issue here in the United States particularly, is that you have more fruits and vegetables appearing here in the United States from Eretz Yisrael than you ever had before. Now, I, Chas v'Shalom, am not suggesting in any way that people should not purchase Israeli product. We certainly want to help Achenu in Eretz Yisrael. But, of course, we know that when we speak about fruits and vegetables from Eretz Yisrael, we always have the issues of mitzvahs atluyas baaretz. We have the issue of Shemitah every 7 years. So what might not have been an issue at all now has become much more of an issue, and it's not always easily identifiable as Israeli product.
So Rabbi Elifin, let me interrupt you. Let's go through these one by one.
Sure.
You're in a supermarket in Idaho, and you want to buy fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Well, halachically, do you have to be chayshish they come from Eretz Yisrael? Well, Eretz Yisrael is one out of 192 countries in the world. It's not even a miyat. It's a miyat she'ein imatzi. It's less than 5% to be chayshish that they come from Eretz Yisrael. I would place to you that there's absolutely no halachic requirement.
I'm not going to argue with you, but, you know, it may be a davish of a minyan, and a davish of a minyan doesn't become bottle.
Why is it a davish of a minyan?
If this
tomato came from Eretz Yisrael, it's not a davish of a minyan.
Okay, a specific tomato may not be, but I don't know. What about a pineapple? I never thought about it. And the other question is, who says it's not efshel avar? You only can rely on bittel when it's efshel avar. If it's something that's something you could be mavar, then you don't rely on bittel.
But how you're in a supermarket in Ida. What's your ability to be mavar where this tomato came from?
You should go over to the supermarket manager and ask him, the fruit manager, where did you get these fruits from?
What's the likelihood a guy in a Safeway is going to know where the buyer buys the tomatoes from?
He may know. They come in a crate. The fruits and vegetables come in a crate for a country of origin.
So in the worst situation, you're saying if you could look at the crate, you should, even on something that is a miyucha b'miyuta, that is possible.
Absolutely. I think that's what the halacha requires. B'makom she'ef shelavar, in a place where it's verifiable.
On a miyut she'ein imatzi, is there a...
Yeah, I don't think there's enough. The miyut she'ein imatzi, I don't think is a het on an ef shelavar. I don't want to pass on the shayla.
Your point is about buying with fruit infestations. I would say we had Rabbi Berkowitz from Eretz Yisrael here in the program a few weeks ago, and he said that if you... And you should. I encourage everybody to listen to what he said. Look it up. It's in the catalog of shows. So don't take my word for it. But if it's when you buy one of those bags of, let's say, lettuce, and it says triple washed, he says since at that point it's unlikely, again a miyach enimati that there would be a bug in it. Because it's triple washed. He said at that point you have a tour of misasek by eating it.
Okay, so I'm going to respectfully... I know Rabbi Berkowitz very, very well. My daughter lived in Sanhedrin Mechevitz for many years. I know Rabbi Berkowitz very well. I'm in the middle of a communication with him, and I have very great respect for Rabbi Berkowitz, because he really deserves it. He's Adam Chashev, but I'm going to respectfully disagree on certain cases, and I'll tell you what I mean. I would agree with him if you bought a bag of triple washed lettuce, iceberg lettuce.
That's what I would agree with him.
Yeah. Okay, iceberg lettuce, I would agree with him. But if I was buying a bag of triple washed romaine lettuce, our experts here at the OU, on almost every occasion that they've opened a bag of triple washed salad that didn't have special hashgacha to make sure that it was indeed properly cleaned, have found taloyim more than the mitzvah matzi shear.
But when you say taloyim, did they find them with a light box? Like, I mean, there's bugs in the ears.
When you go to sleep at night,
dust mites crawl up your nose. I mean, there's bugs everywhere.
You don't have to go to sleep. You could stay up and breathe. When you breathe, there's organisms in the air. I agree with you, but I'm talking about light boxes. Okay, so let's respond to that. So I had the schus many times to see Rav Yoshev Zatzal. Rav Yoshev, in fact, it was very interesting. Rav Yoshev would be very, very gracious and warm whenever I came to see him. And everybody who knew Rav Yoshev knew that his time was extremely limited. And it was really difficult to get his time because of his limited availability and many responsibilities. So somebody told me that they once asked Rav Yoshev, why are you so gracious to Rabbi Elephant where other people have such a difficult time? So he says, because I know when he comes, he's asking for the OU, and the OU is the Hashgacha that everybody ultimately is relying on, so I have an achrayus to Klal Yisrael like the OU does. So I myself had the schus to discuss this shaila, which is a very important and complicated shaila, about taloyim that are not visible, and what is the halacha? So everybody agrees with your point that the Gemara says in more than one place, Lainitna Torah l'malachi asharis, the Torah wasn't given to malachim, and we're only human beings, and we only could see what we could see, and we're not obligated to wear microscopes around our eyes to see organisms that we normally cannot see. But on the other hand, if you look at a piece of lettuce, and you'll see a black dot, so you and I, because I don't consider myself an expert either, may just say, it's a black dot, it's schmutz, it's nothing. An expert could easily identify that as a thrip, as a mite, as whatever. And then Rabbi Yoshua said, we have the obligation to put it on a light box. So the light box is not there to help us see what we wouldn't have been able to see otherwise, because we're not obligated to do that. The light box is there that if we see something, help us see what it is.
Okay. So let's continue. So let me ask you a question.
That's why we go back to romaine lettuce.
So you have to be careful. So you have to be careful with romaine lettuce. Now, so you're in the supermarket. You pick up a can of green beans, and it says green beans and water. It's from Dole Part, whatever. Some mainline manufacturer.
So now that's a great question. So again, this goes back to what I said to you a couple of moments ago. When I came to the OU, that was considered a kosher product, like you just said, what's in it? Green beans and water, no big deal. So the world changed, because when I also came to the OU was certifying a handful of factories in China. Today, the OU itself, and other hashgachas as well, but the OU itself certifies over 450 factories in China. And what have we discovered? We have a mashgiach, he should be gesund und stark, I don't know if you know him, Rabbi Chaim Goldzweig. He was the one that really rallied around this issue. We discovered in some of these factories, again, in the communist country, their way of doing business was very different than the way we do business. The way American factories are established is that if you're packing vegetables, you pack vegetables. That's what you do. You don't do other things. These factories were built as huge factories hundreds and hundreds of employees, but vegetables aren't available 12 months a year. So what do you do in a factory that packs vegetables, but now there's no vegetables because it's not the vegetable season? So they came up with a very simple plan. We're going to can during the off season all sorts of other foods in the exact same kalem. So they could be canning meat, they could be canning non-kosher fish. The same issue comes up regarding Pesach. They could be canning chametzdig products, which will make the kalem chametzdig. So what, from where you're sitting, very correctly, seems to be a very simple product, green beans and water. Well, what about the kalem now?
So let's talk about that, okay? That's a very good point. So to start, as you have, when they're granting, they're doing green beans, and before that they were doing pork and pork, whatever they were, pork rinds or dog food for that matter, right? We can understand clearly they don't want your green beans to take from to taste from either pork rinds or whatever other item, right? In a professional environment.
Absolutely.
So you would assume that the kalim were, even if this happened, the kalim were spotlessly clean, right? I mean, and additionally, so you have shefa, you have a p'tur of shefa for starters, right?
You only have a p'tur of shefa if the water was hot enough.
Well, these are
cooked. You know, I mean, if they cleaned the water, it has to be, the water had to come to temperature of a kashering, of sterilization. You don't know that that's always the case.
Well, when they can, they have to do it. The items are all cooked.
They're all cooked. Well, again, there are many different cleaning processes and many different canning processes. Sometimes it's like you indicate that the water that they flush through is boiling water. Sometimes it's not necessarily the case.
But I have a raya for you.
And one more point.
But Rabbi Elton, I have proof that I'm right.
You're making an assumption. You're making an assumption, which is not always the case. And I wasn't clear enough. So let me clarify, which may change your question. Let's say you have this large factory that's canning vegetables, and using your examples, canning pork or whatever. So your question was based on an assumption: they finish the pork, they go to the vegetables, they finish the vegetables, they go back to the pork. It's not necessarily always that way. What sometimes happens is, you know, the people who are eating pork, nobody on our program, but the people who are eating pork want pork 12 months a year. And the fact that they're doing vegetables now doesn't mean that they don't have to do pork at the same time. So they could have equipment that they're interchanging back and forth from pork to vegetables. There's a whole complicated issue in the world of kashrus of common steam, because the way these equipment are warm heated is not the way your wife heats a pot at home. She has a pot on the stove and the fire is under the pot. In factories where energy, where so much heat is used, that's not the typical manner of heating kalim. The way equipment is typically heated in these factories is with steam. And that steam recirculates around the whole factory. So the same steam that was around the pot that was cooking the pork now goes to the pot that is cooking the green beans.
Rabbi Elephant, all this is correct, but let me tell you a conversation I had with Reb Yitzchak about a year ago. I asked him, could somebody buy cut-up fruit in a ShopRite in Lakewood? Actually.
Okay.
And he said yes, and I said, why? He said, because they don't, a professional place would not use the same knife to cut fruit that they would to cut meat or fish. They don't want your apple to taste from shrimp. He said it's common sense.
So I'm going to tell you the following.
And that's, he said it's common sense. And he said, so if you're dealing in a professional place that is makbid on cleanliness and is makbid on what the customers value that ultimately they have to keep happy, he said they're not using the shrimp knife to cut your fruit. You could be simach that they're going to wash it, and it, whatever the case would be, and therefore would be mutter. That was his psak.
Okay, so I'm not going to disagree with anybody, but I want to tell you something, a conversation that I had almost 30 years ago. Again, this was when I was much younger and not as experienced as I am today. And we were giving hashgacha to a very large factory that made milchigs and parav product. And we obviously kashered the equipment when they went from milchigs to parav. And one time, let's not discuss if it was deliberate or not deliberate, they did not kasher. So I called the person who was in charge of the kosher program at that factory. He happened to have been a Jew, not religious, a person with a PhD in food technology. And I told him, you know, we have a very serious problem now. You didn't kosherize the equipment. So he says to me, Rabbi, I'm a food scientist. I've studied this for years. You know that stainless steel is porous. You know that stainless steel doesn't absorb. So what's the point of this conversation? You know that it doesn't have any dairy taste. Exactly your words, Reb David. Mamish, your words. He says, taste the power of product that was made after the milk product. There's absolutely no taste. And I remember having this discussion, because again, I wasn't as experienced as I am today with Rabelsky Zatzal. At that point, Rabelsky and I were actually sharing an office at the OU. We both came to the OU at the same time. And Rabelsky told me, learn from, as soon as you're beginning your career, he says, your career should always be that we're not going to debate halacha. Because you can't debate halacha. If the halacha says that kashering is required, then kashering is required. The fact that it doesn't taste milchig, the fact that it doesn't have the pork taste, is immaterial. If the halacha says kashering is required, then kashering is required. So, again, I'm not disagreeing. I haven't spoken to Rabbi Abadi, so it's inappropriate for me to agree or disagree. But
Rabbi Abadi is not talking. But wait, respectfully, that's not a good. I don't think that's a good point, because Rabbi Abadi was not saying kashering isn't required. Rabbi Abadi was saying that they would not use the same kalim because they don't want.
So I'm going to tell you what we've discussed. Okay,
Abadi's not debating
the
halacha.
So let's speak to Rabbi Abadi's case. So I'm going to tell you what we've discovered. You know, it's maybe somewhere in the middle. What we've discovered is as follows: that yes. If there's a area that prepares fruit salads, you know, they, like you said, they sell in the different supermarkets, these fruit cups, they sell them on the street here in Manhattan. Fruit cups, you know, watermelon or cantaloupe or whatever, you're right. They're not using that their knives that they use for other food. But when you're talking about a kitchen, because this is where the shiloh comes up also fairly often. People... it's a complicated conversation. I don't know if that's the purpose of today's program. But we get calls from people that sometimes find themselves in a non-kosher restaurant because they have to go there on a business meeting and they have to go to a non-kosher restaurant and they want to know what can or can't they eat. And I'm not going into the marasayin issue at all. I'm talking about the halachic issue, the kashrus issue. And many times they ask, could we have a fruit salad? Exactly what you just mentioned. Well, we've discovered, because we also certify kitchens in the kosher restaurants, when it's busy in a restaurant and there's a lot of pressure in the kitchen, you know, a lot of people there for lunchtime, which is all of 1 hour, or a lot of people there on a busy night, the kitchen is a crazy place, and everybody's doing whatever they can and just picking up whatever they can, what's ever under their hand, just to get the orders out. And if there's a knife in front of you, they're not going to say, well, that knife was used for meat or maybe a little dirty. They're just cutting the fruit and putting it on your plate. That's the reality of a kitchen that's preparing food under pressure. That's not just preparing fruit. You're right. If they're only preparing fruit, I don't have any concern.
So what would you buy without a – would you buy bread without a hesher?
Bread? For sure not. Bread, you know, again, if it's – If you knew the bread is only flour, well, let's talk about bread. First of all, I'm not going in any specific order. I shouldn't say first of all. So one issue is that many of the breads without supervision are milchik, have a dairy ingredient. And you know that the halacha is... And
the halacha is...
I think it's pebeis,
yeah.
Right?
Has to have a pebeis,
right. Pasan elusha b'cholov, bread that's dairy is not kosher. So that really eliminates a lot of bread. You also have a kalim issue because many of the bakeries that produce bread aren't only producing bread. And many of the breads have shortening and oils in them that certainly need hashgacha.
Do they use lard today in baking?
No, they're not using lard. I mean, I shouldn't say they're not using lard, but the use of lard, you know, you speak about the growth of kosher. A big part of the growth of kosher has been because of the elimination to a great extent of the use of lard. you know, one of the big milestones in the history of kashrus, maybe in the history of Klal Yisrael, is Oreo cookies becoming kosher. You know, we get 300 calls a week about Oreo cookies alone, you know, the status of Oreo cookies. Oreo cookies do not become OU certified. I mean, I would like to say it, but it has to be true. Oreo cookies do not become OU certified because Nabisco at that time, now it's Kraft, Nabisco, decided that the kosher market is so important. What happened was they made a business decision, very much in line with what you just said, that they're eliminating lard. Once they made a business decision that they're eliminating lard, then they decided, oh, so for not using lard, we're certifiable, and that's when they became OU certified. So that's, so you're correct in the elimination of lard was a very big stepping stone in many products becoming kosher. But that doesn't mean that vegetable oil doesn't need hashgacha, because vegetable oil could be refined on the same kalim as animal fat.
So you're saying there is no lard used in a common bakery, but the question is, would the kalim that the oil were refined in used for animal fat?
Right.
And where is animal fat used today?
Animal fat is used, I mean, let's say animal fat is used wherever you could get away with it. Because animal fat, given that there's so much of, there's not that much use of animal fat, whenever you could use animal fat, a company is going to use it because they're going to get it for much cheaper than vegetable oil. So I'll give you a great example. Soap. Okay? Soap is made with glycerin, which comes from fat. Probably, I would say, most soaps are made with animal fat. Because why would you want to buy kosher glycerin, which is so much more expensive, instead of buying trefoil glycerin, which is so much cheaper? Now, again, so soap is not a problem, because it's soap.
So soap, but, soap does not need a hechsher, you would say?
No. You see, we got you wanted me to tell you something that doesn't need a hechsher. So I just gave you something.
Can I ask you a question, Rabbi Elephant?
Sure.
Most people I know, right, have eaten string beans without an OU on them from a can, right? At some point in their lives, right? You know, the Mechaba says, and even though the Beis Yosef is Simach on it and the Ramah isn't, but the concept of Kfela, the Gemara says they used to give it to a guy, and the guy would say, taste it, do you taste anything in it, or is it bottled B'shisha, right? So the Beis Yosef says, with Simach, the Ashkenazim are not Simach, some say there's an Eitzah, and Ashkenazi should give it to a Sephardi to taste. And if he says it's good, then you could, okay?
So wait, but
let's go to... I'll ask you a question, Rabbi Elephant. As an expert, and only you could answer this with your vast experience, 30 years of experience, when you pick up a can, what are the chances, like, that the factory is switching between? Is it something that happens 1 in 10 times, 1 in 5 times, or it's 50-50?
It's more than 50-50 probably now.
So it's even more
again,
than
that. You're
saying
that it's very possible.
It's
possibly arrived. I don't want to say it with a definitive, because I'm just not going to do that without knowing for sure. And I'm not sure that we could ever do that because we haven't seen every factory in the world. And the question is, what do you include in the suffix? Because there are factories not only in China, there are factories all over the world, but those factories aren't necessarily sending product to the United States. So it's an interesting Shiloh. What do you include in the suffix?
So you're saying basically that the majority of factories that can switch between kosher
in certain countries.
And which countries would it not be that way? What's it like in the United States?
The United States, it's probably rife not switching.
So would you buy something, green beans that are canned in the United States?
Probably, if I had nothing else, I would have to tell you I would.
But you're saying, is why do you need the suffix for if you have the option of going with Ersha? Why be machdus
well,
yourself?
Well, I'm assuming, and that's how we began our conversation. The conversation began that we're in a place where there's nothing available with a Ersha, which really, I should have told you, you're probably never going to find such a place. Because Baruch Hashem, there's so many products with a kosher that are kosher, you go to supermarkets, you know, some of our people travel around the world in pretty exotic places, and they tell me that they find products with the OU on them, even in places that where there's certainly no Jewish population or a very minimal Jewish population, because the popularity of kosher products is so strong. So that really should have been the beginning of our conversation. But you wanted to have a halachic discussion, which I very much appreciate. But it's unlikely, you know, that you're not going to be able to find a kosher certified product in any supermarket around the world, certainly in the United States.
A lot of listeners, you know, a lot of times I'll throw a question at you, not because I necessarily agree, but just to, you know, get a conversation, provoke a conversation. But basically, okay, your conclusions would be that most vegetables and fruits today have infestation problems that require careful bedika, where a heksher is important.
Okay. I didn't say that. I said many fruit, many vegetables.
Okay, many. Okay.
Many vegetables.
Good. And practically all items, canned, etc., pre-cooked items, even if ostensibly looking at them, there would be no reason for them to require a heksha, but also the suffix of maybe the kalim that were used in a prior run for something that's not kosher, certainly at the least efshe levure, but also it could be a real suffix of blias, should need a heksha, but b'shas hatzchak, you say you could see the you could see that somebody b'shata where you don't have the OU saying, look, it's a suffix that they were ever used for something else, and therefore I could use something that shouldn't need it, and afterwards be simach, I guess, on the concept of fail. Look, it's just string beans and water, and there's a tzad that maybe the factory did it b'shata tzchak. You say possibly you would be simach. Is that a fair conclusion? And certainly, let me just finish. And certainly, l'chatchila, to be mighty yourself from any suffix, it's always good to use, even on things that would seemingly not require to use a heksher, just to be mighty yourself from any suffix. Is that a fair conclusion?
I think you've summarized it fantastically. You want a job at the OU?
It's been really an honor to have you on. Thank you very much, Rabbi Elephant.
You too. Nice speaking to you.
Yeah, bye-bye. We have on the phone with us, from Baltimore, Maryland, Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg, who's the Kashrus Administer of the Star K. He was formerly a Rav in San Jose, California. Welcome, Rabbi Goldberg.
Hi, Shalom Aleichem.
Shalom Aleichem. So, Rabbi Tzvi, we want to know, if we're taking a walk through a supermarket, and you're in a place maybe where there are no Hechsherim, or there are limited Hechsherim, what can you or can't you buy? Take us on a virtual tour.
Okay, that's a pretty open-ended question. So let's say like this. First of all, the Star K, one of our big pushes is to teach people what things do not need a heksher, because we know that things that have a heksher often cost more, and we're trying to help people save money. So let's say, for instance, something that obviously most people know that doesn't need a heksher, like water, right? Bottled water. So there are a lot of hechsherim on water. We give hechsherim on water. And when companies call us for a hechsher on water, we tell them, you know, it doesn't really need one. And they say we want one anyway because consumers, you know, it sells better. So, you know, that's something that really, if you buy it with a hechsher, that's an example of something that really you're not getting really that much out of it. The heksher is not, I mean, the heksher visits, right? You have to visit the plant. But as a consumer, the difference between water with a heksher, I'm talking about plain water without any additives, like, you know, no flavors or anything. The difference is very, very minimal and almost not really important. So that's something that is, you know, doesn't need a heksher at all. There are certain things that obviously need a heksher, like obviously chicken, meat, sauces, prepared foods, things with complicated ingredients and even not so complicated. And then there are things in the middle which we could recommend without a heksher. But if you bought it with a heksher, it would be beneficial, because then you know for sure that the agency is taking care of it.
So let me ask you though, what's olive oil? Does it need a heksher?
We say that it does need a hechsher because we say that it does need a reliable hechsher because even virgin olive oil it could have some additives. There's sometimes there's some monkey business in that industry, and we say
when you say monkey business, they're not putting lard into olive oil.
Well, there are additives, and there are
what type of animals are there in olive oil?
Additives. There are additives.
I'm asking things you what type of additives?
What type of things that need a hechsher sometimes? And so
like what?
Like what?
Give me an example.
We found that you know through our contacts we have an olive oil expert here in the Star K. And you know he certifies many plants, and so that's he's based on his assessment that okay, so flour is something you're talking about, what, bread flour, wheat flour?
Yeah, bread flour, whole wheat flour, white flour, plain old.
Okay, so that's
regular flour.
Regular flour. So that's another example of something where the hechsher on it is minimal, and really you can buy it without a hechsher, and really it's not we don't consider that to be an issue. Now, of course, if you want yashin or you want that, you'd have to make sure of that. But other than that, it's not a problem.
What about sugar, salt?
Okay, those are examples of things that aren't. Sugar, I don't think there is a non-kosher sugar available. Salt, the same thing. Now, for Pesach, it's a different story. We're not talking about Pesach, right? So sugar and salt all year do not require a hechsher.
What about sweeteners like NutraSweet, Stevia,
same thing, right.
Sweet and Low?
Those are extracted, so there could be some shilas with them. So if someone wanted to, if you want to buy it with a hechsher, you have some benefit. But there isn't. We say they're okay without a hechsher as well. I mean, there are many things. Like, let's say you're going down you want to go down the supermarket aisle. So you have aluminum foil. Most aluminum foils have a hechsher, but it's not really necessary. You have raw grains. Raw grains also don't require a hechsher. Let's say just plain beans, things like that don't require hechsher. Cornmeal, cornstarch. These are things that don't. Now, let's say you have honey. So honey, a lot of the honeys have a hechsher, but if it's unflavored, we hold that it doesn't require a hechsher. There are some hechsherim that are worried about the way that they strain it. They heat it, and they worry about the heating apparatus. But in our estimation, it's not been...
What about really dried spices?
So dried spices also, we don't require a hechsher. Now, all these things that we say don't require, we're very careful to let people know that it's only if it's not from Eretz Yisrael. Almost any item from Eretz Yisrael, agricultural item that grows, would need a hechsher because of the Trumas and Meisters. So we already answered that question, but right.
I remember when I was in Yeshiva, so Reb Beryl Soloveitchik only used to eat in Shemitah. He only ate Paris and Yerukas from Chutz Laaretz because of Shemitah. So when guys would try to be on his good side, they would bring him vegetables from America, fruits. So I remember once when I was there, a boy brought a crate of oranges, a whole basket of oranges, and they opened it up. It was stamped Jaffa oranges.
Right. So my son is learning in one of the Brisk Yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, and he asked me also when I came to bring some I don't remember
vegetables.
What it was, but it was something that the Rav there wouldn't, his Rosh Hashiva wouldn't eat.
So what do you say, orange juice, apple juice, grapefruit juice, tomato juice? Walk me through these.
Okay, so the juices are, if they are plain orange juice, so we do not require a hechsher on plain orange juice, as long as there's not nothing added. You have to check for flavors. Many orange juices, which say, even if they say 100% juice, you look on the side and you see it has flavors. Now, how can they call it 100% juice and then have flavors is an interesting question, because the flavors don't take up any real space in the juice, so it's not considered to be an additive. But if it has flavors, it would need a hechsher. Plain orange juice, so it doesn't require. apple juice,
grapefruit,
and apple juice, and let's say apple cider. So if it's 100% pure, we accept any of them. But here we say it's better to get with a Hechsher. Sometimes they're filtered with gelatin, even though they take out the gelatin, and it's certainly bottled many times over, and they don't want it there, and they take it out. But because of that, it would be better to get it with a Hechsher, but it's kosher to get it without a Hechsher.
What about grapefruit juice?
Okay, grapefruit juice is the same for white grape, but if you had red or pink, sometimes they could add carmine to it, and carmine we don't consider to be kosher, so that would be
What is carmine for the uninitiated like
carmine
me? What is carmine?
Is an extract of a bug, and
I hear
what.
The red color,
right? And there's a big shiloh about it, and but we don't consider it to be kosher.
What about tomato juice?
Tomato juice could be made in a facility that packs other things like meat products and things like that, and it's a hot process. So when you have it's made hot, so then you have to get it with the Hechsher. I got a call today about something. It's a new item. It's called rice cauliflower or rice broccoli. Did you ever hear of that?
Nope.
Okay. So what they're doing is taking little pieces of cauliflower, broccoli, making it look like rice a little bit, and they sell that. And the question was, does that need a Hechsher or not? And the problem is, depends what it's made from. If it's made from the stalk, which some of them could be made just from the stalk, then it really doesn't need a Hechsher. It's just a piece of stalk of cauliflower that's cut up, you know, like rice size, and that, you know, that would be fine. If it's made from the florets, then those that would need a Hechsher, a good Hechsher that's checking for the bugs.
Cream, yogurt? Do they need a Hechsher now?
Right. Well, those are processed items. Yes, that would need a Hechsher. Yes.
And because of what
Even
reason?
Butter.
Like butter.
Usually, we used to say that butter didn't need a Hechsher. It used to be in the old, if you weren't Makbid on Chol Yisrael, or even if you were.
Even if you were Makbid on Chol Yisrael.
Right, according to some Shiva. Right, according to some.
Lakewood Yeshiva used to serve butter that wasn't Chol Yisrael. I don't know if they do today when I was there.
Right. But nowadays, they have additives. There's whey that's added, and that needs to have a Hechsher. And so the butter needs a Hechsher. And the other items, the yogurt certainly needs a Hechsher. It has all sorts of enzymes and things in there. So
because I remember of Gift saying yogurt does not need a Hechsher.
Oh, really?
I remember of Gift saying yogurt does not need a Hechsher because it could only be made out of from a cow. So he said we did not need it. That's
right.
I remember growing up.
Right, so a lot of things, it's just become more complicated over time. You know, many people, even very firm people, they remember growing up, they would just read the ingredients on the label, right, and they would see it. There's no lard in it, so it's kosher. But, you know, the processes have become so more complicated that it doesn't work anymore. Nobody would say nowadays that yogurt, you know, doesn't need a Hechsher. Yogurt is a problem even sometimes with a Hechsher because it has sometimes gelatin in it. And so a lot of times you'll see yogurts with just a K on it and not a reliable Hechsher. And the reason for that usually is because of the gelatin that they add. And gelatin comes from animals. So it's usually treif. So that's why the yogurts wouldn't have.
See, let me ask you a question. What about all canned vegetables? You pick up a can of green beans and it says green beans, water, and salt. Does it need a Hechsher?
Right. So it used to be in the olden days that we used to say these vegetables, which let's talk about the ones that aren't buggy, like the green beans, right? Because the buggy ones would obviously need a Hechsher for the insects. But it used to be, for many, many years, people said that the agencies were saying that you do not need a Hechsher on canned vegetables. But maybe, I don't know, maybe 10, 15, more than 10 years, 15 years, maybe more. We've been saying that they do, and it's pretty much agreed upon by all the major agencies, because we found that they could be made in plants that cook meat. So if you have the same cooker, obviously cooking treif and then cooking your vegetables is going to be a problem. But what we can do is sometimes we can check out various brands and find that they don't make meat in those plants. So then there's really no shilas. There's no, you know, if they're just doing vegetables, that's really the only shilas it could be. So we look into, there are some of the brands that we've looked into and that are okay. There are some others. Anyway, we look into some, you know, if we have a specific question, we look into the brand and...
Rabbi Goldberg, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
The
Del Monte, that's the one.
Del Monte, yeah.
Right, Del Monte. So even though they don't have one of the major agencies, Hechsherim, we accept most of their products, like the green beans and things like that, except for tomato products and potatoes, spinach and beets. What we try to do is try to pin it down, like to the exact item, and if we can find that information, then we let people know.
Rabbi Goldberg, I have a question. When they convert a plant, let's say they're making green beans, and before they made the green beans, they were making porked beans, right?
Okay, right.
How much time does it usually take to turn over the equipment in a plant from pork and beans to green beans, so that, you know, if they want to now sell for Del Monte, they want to go from pork and beans...
It's not that long. Usually they would kasher on a Monday morning, because you have to have the equipment that it should be ene ben yomo. So you want to let it sit for 24 hours.
Not when you kasher. When it would be done, not with a heksha. You say the thing that has the green beans, before that they use pork and beans. When a big company, these are probably vats that have, you know, thousands of gallons in them. When they go from pork and beans to green beans, how long does it take them to clean and transfer and change, set up the new bottling? How long does that usually take?
Are you trying to see if it's more than 24 hours?
Yes.
No, it's not 24 hours. Usually, nowadays, it doesn't have to be 24 hours. A lot of times it would be. It's unknown. Every company would be different, and it depends.
So
but, a lot of times, you want to know whether or not you can always assume that kalim are in a bnei yomam.
Well, this is what I want to know. I want to know that you have a suffix if it's you have a suffix whether there was something treif there.
Right.
Right. You have a suffix if it was a ben yomei.
Right.
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 So you have a sex fake on a drabanan on blias. Why wouldn't you kasher it also sex fake?
Why wouldn't you kasher it?
Why wouldn't you say it's kasher? It's a sfek fake. It's a drabanan, and it's a sfek fake.
Right,
it's a safik
right.
Ben yaima. It's a safik of those anything treif de bechol.
Right, I understand what you're saying, and maybe b'di'evet, if someone had it or used it, or you know, then we would rely on that. We do rely on stam kelim and ben yomim, but it's becoming that more and more the companies just switch over very fast. You know, I couldn't give you a percentage. I don't know if anybody could, but it's happening very fast. So it's difficult to even say that anymore.
It's certainly a suffix, though, isn't it?
It is a suffix. It is a suffix. Yes, it is a suffix. Look, there are so many. You want to say we should tell people to go buy them without a heksher? There are so many brands with a heksher, and so it doesn't. You know,
I'm just wondering when my parents grew up in America,
right?
They didn't have the OU or the Huff K or the Star K or any of these things. And
right.
What did they do? That's what they used to do, and I'm trying to understand. What were they simach on to do it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you mean they just bought beans and everything without
it?
They would
cook it again. They would say it says corn
right.
and water,
right.
corn and water, and that's what they would.
Right. Well, that's
that would have the word no.
Right. Well, that's what the agencies were saying for many years. So I mean, they were relying on probably they could have been relying on the agencies' assessments. Because that's what we would say. We would tell people for many years that these things are not a problem. And now, because we realized that the same plants, or I don't know if we realized it, or they just started changing. It became that more of the plants that are making vegetables are also making meat. So the the Metzias changed, and that's why the you know, the Psak changed.
Is there any difference between what, you know, things that you would do than, let's say, the Chafke, the Start, the OU, etc., or do you sort of act in unison?
In what area? In this area?
In this area.
In this area of what things don't require a Hefsher? It's hard to know, because in terms of what we accept for our own Hefsherim, like what we accept into the facilities, like I'm telling you, some of these things don't require a Hefsher. Well, that's only what we tell consumers. But when we make our own runs for Star-K, we do require a Hefsher on many of these items. So when you're talking about our making our own products that are going to have a Star-K or the OU or the Chaf-K, there is more or less agreement on what things require a Hechsher and what don't. The things that...
Any chumris that you have, are there any particular chumris that the Star-K has that maybe one of the organizations doesn't have?
It's a little loaded question. So let's talk about, let's say, one what might be salmon. Okay, salmon... The OU, based on the Psak, I think, of Rebelski Zatzal, holds that the salmon, the color of the salmon, is enough of a proof that it is a kosher fish, because the red color...
Chazutze Maralov.
Right. Yeah. There's no way that the... Now, actually, what's interesting is that color on the farm salmon is not something that is natural to the fish. The salmon fish is naturally gray. The reason that salmon are pink, the wild salmon eat crustaceans. They eat pink creatures. But the farm salmon that are just grown by the farmers, and they don't eat naturally. They just eat whatever the farmer gives them. The reason that they are pink is because the salmon gives them, the farmers give them a colorant. And that's why sometimes you see on salmon color added. It doesn't mean the color was added to the fish after it was caught. It means color was added to the food. And it's carotenes, like carrots. They give them something like carrots to make them pink. And actually the farmers can pick whatever color they want the salmon to be, they pick it. So I always find interesting, sometimes I hear the ladies in the office talking about how, you know, this, you have to go to this place, the salmon there looks so, you know, appetizing. And really, it's kudos to the choir. They rely on the
And the Star-K.
The Star-K requires to see the
skin. Why is that?
Skin. And the skin is where you can see the scales, or you can see.
But what are you afraid of? My question is, what are you afraid of? Are there other types of fish that can also be turned pink using the same?
Right. Well, we've come across examples of some fish that would turn color by the by whoever wanted to change the color. So therefore, we are. There is a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that you have to see the scales to identify a fish. There's a halacha of bedikas.
Yeah, Pezayin, I think it is, right? Simon Pezayin. Yeah.
So what the OU is saying is that this is you know, just as good. No, we recognize that that's a svara. We certainly can understand it. But we require the mashgiach to check, or we require the fish to have tuna fish, is the same kind of thing. So the Star-K tuna fish would have the mashgiach checking each one, and the OU tuna fish, it depends. If it doesn't have mashgiach tmidi, then the mashgiach didn't check each one. He's coming, you know, he's yotzei v'nichnas, going in and out. If it's OUP tuna, our understanding is the mashgiach is checking each one. So what are the cases?
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure having you on with us. We're going to also have on two rabbanim from the OU. Should be very interesting discussion and try to see the differences.
Okay,
thank you very much, Rabbi Goldberg.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Okay.
Take care.
Well, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.